We were discussing Ratana Sutta, and basically, as we discussed, this is a sutta which Buddha preached first actually to Venerable Ananda during a situation where the city Vaisali came across certain issues. So basically, there were famine and then a danger because of some epidemic. And again, the threat of non-human beings. So in order to overcome that, so the king, that is the Vajjins, actually they invited the Buddha. And then they first got the consent from the king Bimbisara. And then actually they invited the Buddha, and then Buddha came to the Vaisali. At that time, when the Buddha actually taught the sutta to Venerable Ananda, and asked him to preach this whole sutta going around the city. So then Venerable Ananda went with all the other, the kings, the Vajjins, and used the Buddha's bowl to sprinkle water and very much like blessing the whole city. Seems like that is the beginning of maybe using paritta, using certain sutta or the qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha as a blessing. When a country, a situation has become fairly difficult. Now, Venerable Ananda did that, and then he arrived the assembly hall, and then Buddha himself, with Venerable Ananda and all the other gatherings, so Buddha again recited the Ratana Sutta. So as we discussed last time, Ratana Sutta consists of sublime qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and it's very much like blessing to the whole universe, particularly here to the Vaisali, that particular kingdom. Yani the Bhutani Samagatani Bhumma Nivaya Niva Antalikki. Now Buddha is addressing all the celestial beings, non-human beings, and whoever either residing in this earth or whoever residing on the other places. So asking them to properly listen. And then Sabbeva Bhuta Sumana Bhavantu. And Buddha is telling, okay, let everyone be happy with some pleasant, loving nature. Atopi Sakkaccha Sunantu Bhasita. And now you got to listen carefully. Tasmahi bhuta nisameta sabbe mettam karota manusya pajaya. Now it's a kind of a request making to the other non-humans. So you got to have some kind of loving kindness to this human population. Now Buddha is giving a certain clause here. So these human beings are actually paying respect to you, offering certain offerings, but we can say certain gifts to you, and therefore please consider them with loving kindness, protect them with loving kindness. And it's a kind of a request that Buddha is making, addressing all that non-humans. Yankinji vittang idava hurangva sangye suvayang ratanam panita nano samang atti tathagatena idampi buddhe ratanam panita. Now here, Buddha starts with the qualities of the Buddha. After inviting the celestial beings, non-human beings to pay attention and to have some loving kindness towards the whole human population, now Buddha is making a resolution using the qualities, sublime qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. So starting with the Buddha's qualities. So whatever the treasure available here or beyond, so that means within this human realm or within this whole earth, or something available in the outside the world, outside the earth, there is nothing comparable with the Buddha. So Buddha is the supreme gem in a way. So Buddha is the supreme jewel in the way, which is where Buddha is the first one who realized the path and realize the unconditioned. And now he is using his sublime qualities as a resolution, as a blessing to the whole world. And so there Buddha mentioned, Sanghesuvayam ratanam panita. Nano samang ati tathagatena idampi buddhe ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvatti hotu. So there is none equal to the tathagata, equal to the Buddha. So using this sublime truth, let there be peace, or let there be safety in this particular place, here the Vesali, and here we can talk to anybody, any place, everywhere. So we can use this as a resolution, this as a sublime truth, either in the earth or in the outside the earth. There is nothing equal to the Buddha. There's no person equal to the Buddha. There's no human, there's no gods, there's no Brahma equal to the Buddha. So that is the sublime truth. So using this truth, may there be peace, may there be happiness, may there be safety. So that's the wish that Buddha is making. Now, if we go to the next slide, now Buddha talks with respect to the Dhamma. Hayam viragam amatam panitam yadajjaga sakyamuni samahito natena dhammena samatti kinchi idampi dhamme ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvatti hotu. Now here, previously actually Buddha referred the Buddha himself, the Tathagata. Now he is referring the Dhamma. The Dhamma he realized. So hayam, so all the different pains, or we can say the asavas, the influxes. So when someone is following this Dhamma properly, all those pains, asavas, influxes are starting to decay, destroy. So ultimately they become completely destroyed. Hinasava is a name given to the Arahant, where all the influxes are completely removed. All the taints are completely removed, uprooted. So that is the sublime quality of the Dhamma. Actually, whoever practicing that Dhamma, inculcating those good qualities within oneself, is capable of uprooting all these influxes within him. So now Buddha is using those supreme qualities of the Dhamma to bless the whole world. Hayam viraga. And the other thing is, the one who is practicing, rather than he become passionate, rather than his mind become lustful, now is his mind become more dispassionate. So viraga. And then amata and panita. So this, in a way, we can call it as certain synonyms for Nibbana. So Khayang could be a synonym for Nibbana because it's a complete elimination of the defilements. Then Viraga is a synonym because there is no any attachment. It's a completely detached state of mind. Then Amata, there is no coming and going, arising and passing away. Or there is no coming into birth and then getting to death. So there is no such thing. So therefore it's amata, that is the deathless. And then panita, so it is sublime. So the state of mind, the one who has realized the Dhamma, who is experiencing Nibbana, we can say his mind is in a sublime level. Yadajjaga Sakyamuni Samahito. Now this is something the Buddha, the Sakyamuni Buddha, who is with the concentrated, well-collected mind, who has attained. Natena dhammena samatti kinchi. So there is no teaching which is equal to this kind of dhamma. So the Buddha's teaching is so unique in that sense. So the person who is practicing that dhamma is taken to the khayang, to the utter destruction of all the defilements, all the influxes, all the pains, and then mind become dispassionate, then one may touch the deathless, and then mind becomes completely peaceful and sublime. And there is no such dhamma, such teaching available anywhere. So this is the unique feature of the dhamma. Natena dhammena samatti kinchi. So there is nothing equal to that dhamma. So basically here, the Buddha is using those sublime qualities. So the first one actually, yam buddha setto parivanna isuchin samadhimanantari kanyamahu. So here actually, Buddha is referring the anantarika samadhi. So anantarika samadhi actually is something referred to the arahatta pala samadhi. So which is very unique according to the Dhamma. So arahatta pala samadhi is a quite unique samadhi. And so there are certain qualities with respect to that particular samadhi, and sometimes certain other ascetics have come to Venerable Ananda and even to the Buddha and asked certain sublime qualities available in that samadhi, which is kind of an exceptional kind of samadhi, which is not available in the other teachings, available in the other, say, beliefs. So it's a so unique samadhi. Nasasankara niggahya varitavato. So that is another quality here expected or kind of mentioned about the arahatta pala samadhi, where the person who is experiencing it doesn't do any kind of a formation. Now say for example, when we are trying to attain a particular samadhi, so we do various fabrications, we do various preparations, and we do try to maintain that samadhi, and we do a lot of intentional activities in order to maintain and in order to very much attain that samadhi and to maintain that samadhi. But here one special sublime quality of the arahatta pala samadhi is explained as na sasankara niggaihya varitavato. It is not that you are maintaining or experiencing that samadhi by suppressing any other defilements, by suppressing any other hindrances, by suppressing any other disturbances. So it's very much like a natural, sublime state of the mind the arahant is experiencing, because his mind is utterly free from all the defilements. So the Nibbana in the utter sense, the complete sense is defined as ragakkhayo, dosakkhayo, mohakkhayo. We are complete uprooting of the raga, the lust, hatred and delusion. So the arahant is the person that who has attained such kind of a state of mind. So his mind is completely pure. So now, since it is completely pure, he doesn't want to suppress any defilement, because there are no defilements at all. So therefore, the maintenance of that particular samadhi is, we can imagine, it's very much like a peaceful state of mind, where arahants may be maintaining it with an effortless way. Defilements are the ones disturbing the mind. Now the mind has become completely pure. So as a result of that, so there are no any oscillations in the mind. So mind is maintaining or kept in a utter peaceful state. So this one explanation given by Venerable Ananda, referring to one Jatila Bhikkhuni, another ascetic. So when she is referring the Anantarika Samadhi, about this Arhattapala Samadhi, and again there is no coming and going in that state. So there is no arrival, there is no attachment to a particular state, a particular object, and there is no any refusal or repulsion from a particular object. So that means mind is in a complete equilibrium. a complete equipoise. Typically, when we are practicing a particular samadhi, so if it is a peaceful one, probably we may get too much attached to it. Completely peaceful, and again, the mind has become completely still. Titang. So mind has become completely still. And it is not something that he is maintaining by suppressing other defilements. Rather, the maintenance of the samadhi happens very naturally, effortlessly. So these are something that we can recognize from the suttas, certain sublime, unique features to this arhattapala samadhi. So the arhattapala samadhi is sometimes referred as avitakka samadhi. So there are no any thoughts, there are no any ups and downs, there are no any again and again coming to the mind or again and again applying the mind to a particular object. Rather, it is free from any vitakka, free from any applied thoughts. So likewise, many interesting features are explained in certain places in the Dhamma at various suttas. And here, this Anantarika Samadhi, Arhattapala Samadhi, Buddha says, is something very unique. You can't find it at any other place. You can't find it in any other teaching. And you can't find an Arahant in any other order, any other ascetic group. So therefore, the path which is showing this samadhi, which is heading towards this samadhi, is something very sublime, something very unique. So that is the Buddha's teaching, that is the Dhamma. So therefore, Buddha used that as a truth. Ayang yam Buddha setto parivanna isuching. So the purity that the Supreme Buddha praised, so the pure state of the mind that the Buddha has praised, and then which he call kind of a concentration, kind of a collectedness of the mind, which is quite effortless. And there is none equal to that state of mind. And this is something that Buddha is now using to bless the others, bless the people in this Vaisali. And he is telling here, Idampi Dhamme Ratanam Panitang Etena Satchena Suvatti Hotu. So this is a sublime quality of the Dhamma. So with that truth, may there be safety. May there be happiness. May there be peacefulness. I think, Shamila, that is the only slides I have provided you. Am I?
The next page also has two more. Yes.
Yeah, two more are there. Yes. Now, actually, Buddha starts with the sublime qualities of the Sangha. Actually, this sutta is not in... First Buddha's qualities, then Dhamma's qualities, then Sangha's qualities is not very much like that. We can say first it started with the sublime qualities of the Buddha, then Buddha talks certain sublime qualities of the Dhamma, and then in length sublime qualities of the Sangha is explained, and again some qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha are explained. So likewise, it is arranged in a different way. We can't say it is in a linear order that everything is arranged. Rather, things are arranged in a different way. Now he is referring the sublime qualities of the Sangha. Ye pungala atta satang pasatta chattari etani yugani honti te dakkhinayya sugatassa savaka etesu dinnani mahapphalani. Idampi Sanghe Ratanang Panitang Ete. Once returner, Anagami is it. And the person who has fully accomplished that. And then another person who is practicing in order to attain the Arhatta state, the complete liberation. And ultimately, the last one who has attained that, who has accomplished the full liberation. So that is how the eight persons are explained. And if we take as pairs, they are in four. Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arihatta. So we can call them as pairs, the one who is in the path and one who has accomplished the path, fulfilled the path. Te dakkhineya sugatassa savaka. Now, they are actually worthy of all the merits, worthy of all the offerings. Etesu dinnani mahapalani. So Buddha mentioned, so whatever the offerings that one would give to them, so it becomes very, very fruitful. And they give a lot of merit. So that's why sometimes anuttaram punyakhetam. That is how explained to the Sangha. And anuttaram punyakhetam. So it is the supreme field of merit. So that's why when we are talking the sublime qualities of the Sangha, which is highlighted, so whatever the offering given to that Sangha is giving a lot of merit, a lot of benefits. So sometimes we think, so when we offer the receiver is the one getting more benefit, but the opposite could be true with respect to the Sangha. So it is the donor who is benefiting a lot. Now, if you are offering something to a beggar, so we can say, okay, the beggar is someone who was in a desperate situation and he was in need of food. He was utterly hungry. So as a result of my offering, he was able to overcome hunger. So he was happy. So very much like that poor person has now quite happy. So therefore we can say the receiver has become more benefited. But on the other hand, if we consider the Sangha, the opposite could be true even, where the Sangha also actually the member of the Sangha, maybe a monk, a nun. So once receiving of the food or whatever other requisite, so he also may be happy. But more than that, the person who donated is accumulating a lot of merit because he has given that to the Supreme Sangha. So therefore, it is not that the mere the monk may be, they may be not be a perfect person, may have some defilements, may have certain qualities which we can't approve, but still he is representing the Sangha. So therefore we don't need to condemn or we don't need to look down them. Rather here when we are offering something to the Sangha, so what we are referring is that noble Sangha. So whatever we offer to that noble Sangha is carrying a lot of benefits. Then Buddha refers that etena dhammena etena dinnani mahapalani idampi sanghe ratanam panitam etena sacchena suatti hotu. And now Buddha uses that as a resolution, as a truth to bless these Vaisalyans. And using which now Buddha is telling, by this truth, may there be safety, may there be happiness. And the last one, here actually what I have selected. Ye suppayutta manasa dalhena nikkamino gotama sasanamhi. Te pattipatta amatang vigaiha laddha mudha nibbutin bunyamana. Idampi sanghe ratanang panitang etena sacchena suatti hotu. Now, when one is experiencing Nibbana, when one is experiencing what we just described, the Arahanta Pala, so the state of mind is somewhat further explained here. Yesupayutta manasa dalhena. So he has attained that not by mere chance. So he went through kind of a striving. He practiced to the best of his capacity. And he was striving. And as a result of that, he was able to realize the Nibbana. As a result of that, he was able to completely eradicate all the defilements. And we can say, so he is now experience in that nibbana. He is now, in a way, experiencing that nibbana, which is very much like given without any payment or without any kind of a, say, what we can say, he has experienced without paying anything. It is not kind of a material transaction he is doing, but rather it is very much he has experienced that, realized that, and now laddha mudha nibbutin bunyamana. So enjoying perfect peace, obtain free of charge. Now, this is a very interesting term here. So now, suppose that you want to experience certain kind of happiness, but when you are experiencing that, sometimes you have to pay a lot of money, and you have to actually take a ticket, and you have to go to that particular place. And likewise, it is not that something that you are gaining free of charge. You have to pay maybe a lot of money in order to experience it. But here, actually, things are very much like experience free of charge. So it is very much, it is not kind of a material transaction. It is not a monetary transaction, what we are calling here. Even if you pay millions, you can't gain it. But if you are practicing diligently, and if you are doing it properly, and if you are maintaining the sila, samadhi, panya, so that is a kind of a situation where you are able to fulfill that task. So the fulfillment of sila, samadhi, panya might not have any kind of monetary involvement even. If you have some money and if you can pay, probably, I mean, you can get some merit. But if you suppose now when you are meditating, it is not that you are able to experience by mere economical way. It's not that all the rich people who are experiencing it. Rather, if you are diligently practicing, if you are properly practicing, honestly practicing, it is up to you. And therefore, all these spiritual benefits, we can say that they are not kind of monetary transactions. So when you attain a particular samadhi, when you attain a particular peaceful state of mind, so you don't need to pay for anything. You don't need to pay any tax for the government, or you don't need to pay anything for the another person. Rather, it is your own accomplishment. It is because of your own striving, diligent practice. So what you have reaped, what you are going to experience. So therefore, we can say, so once you arrive that state, once you realize Nibbana, so it is available to you. Very much like it has become your own vehicle. It has become your own property. So certain terminologies are there when we are talking in a particular samadhi. Bhavita, bahudikata, yanikata, vattukata, anuttita, parichita, susamaraddha. Bhavita, bahulikata. Now, the person who is attaining that particular samadhi, it's not that he is attaining that just for once, but again and again he is practicing, again and again he is attaining. So as a result of that, so that particular attainment become very much like available to him. Because he is repeatedly doing it, so as a result of that, it becomes very much like his own vehicle. Say if you have a own vehicle, say you have a car. So whenever you want to go somewhere, so you can immediately use that car and you can take it and then you can drive it and you can arrive wherever you need. So it is available for you. It is your own car. So like that, when you practice this particular attainment, so it becomes your own vehicle. Whenever you want, you can put it to your mind to that state. Yani kata, vattu kata. And it becomes your own property like. Immediately you can put your mind to there. It is not that something you have to strive again and accomplish it. But once you practice it, immediately
you can put it, it's very much like it is in your hand. Pattukata, anuttita, parichita. So it has become fulfilled, complete, and you again and again practiced it. Susuma radda, and will develop that, will attain that. So likewise, when we are referring a certain higher collected states of mind, higher samadhi, what we sometimes call as cheto vimutti. So all these terms are referred to that. Now, when you are practicing it and when you have reaped that, when you have arrived that, so you can immediately use it, you can immediately attain to that, you can experience that blissful state. You can experience that peaceful state without paying any money. So that is something interesting way that Buddha is referring here. Laddha muda nibbutim bunyamana. Having plunged into the deathless, enjoying perfect fees, obtained free of charge. This too is the sublime gem in the Sangha. And with that truth, may there be peace, may there be safety. So this is another quality that Buddha is referring. So we can say it is very much the practice-related one. Now, the practitioner is the one, the Sangha, it is not merely monks and nuns referred here under the Sangha. Whoever the noble Sangha, there may be lay people who are the attained ones. Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, there may be lay people, lay nobles. So they also are considered as the Sangha. Monks and nuns are considered as a Sangha. Now all these orders, nobles, are referred here. So idampi sanghe ratanam panitam etena sacchena suatti hotu. So here we can recognize Buddha is referring certain sublime qualities of the Sangha, certain qualities of the Dhamma, certain qualities of the Buddha to bless the Vaisalians. And we see in the future also to further refer this same sutta and to go into one by one. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Sarai Bhante, we have 5 questions.
Right.
Stop the share. Question number 1 of 5. This is a mindful sitting question. Dear Bhante, my sitting practice is mindfulness on breathing. After 10 to 15 minutes of observation of the in-breath and out-breath, it starts to calm down and become very fine and non-detectable. I keep on observing and the focus naturally goes to my posture and body. I do not end up in a spacious emptiness as reported by many. Want to check with Bhante if I should continue with the posture and body observations or keep the attention again on the diminishing breath to reach the emptiness with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, we don't need to hurry to attain the emptiness. So, because sometimes we become anxious or we become impatient to attain emptiness because many people are talking about it. But rather than trying to do in that manner, so if we are able to say peacefully practice our own daily routine. Suppose that you have a daily sitting, daily walking, and say listening to Dhamma. So likewise, assume that with respect to your spiritual practice, if there are certain routine work that you are involved with, just continue that with a happy mood. So as we develop fair amount of concentration, then we can use that concentration to do a proper investigation to various phenomena, bodily phenomena, various feelings, various perceptions, various formations, thoughts, intentions, etc. So that actually helps to develop a fair amount of wisdom. So that wisdom is the one taking us to emptiness. So emptiness in that sense is very much like a result that we can experience as a result of our continuous practice. So we don't need to, or we can't actually jump to that state, and we don't need to push ourselves or hurry up in ourselves. Rather, it's a matter of successfully, peacefully enjoying the present day moment. or enjoying the present moment, enjoying the present day practice. Say when you are practicing today's task, today's mindful sitting, just enjoy it. Do it wholeheartedly. Do it honestly. Do it continuously. And when you are doing your mindful walking, do it wholeheartedly. Enjoy it. And try to recognize all different phenomena, and you know that various proper instructions are there. And you are fulfilling it to the best of your ability. So that's all we need to do. When we are continuing like that, so that continuous practice will lead us someday to this emptiness. So therefore, don't worry about that you are unable to reach emptiness right now. It may happen in the future. But today, as much as possible, continue our practice diligently, and it will take care of reaping you the proper result.
So this is a continuation of the like the same person has written this part as well, again on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, further to my previous question, what is the technique to observe the posture and body if one reaches to this stage after the breath fades away? I have very limited knowledge on elements meditation and do not know how the observation should be done. Much merits for your service, Bhante, with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it is not that we are using the posture to attain emptiness. So rather, the posture, the breath, the elements, feelings, perceptions, formations, all are able to let go of, then only one may attain the emptiness. So therefore, I mean, don't worry about these things right now. So if you are able to experience a state of mind which is the fading off of the breath, see whether you are getting any kind of a thought, any kind of a feeling, any kind of a sensation. And probably if you experience such, and you probably can see how they are beginning, how they are starting, and how they are changing, how they are passing away. And so likewise, we need to improve our understanding, improve our, say, insight knowledges. So if you are practicing Anapanasati, there are also probably you can do a little bit of investigation. See, rather than simply referring as in-breath and out-breath, so once your mind become calm, relaxed, one-pointed, so probably you can try to recognize whether the in-breath is maybe warm or cool, where is it touching, and what is the kind of a movement available. So likewise, now we are trying to recognize certain fundamental characteristics of the breath. So it is not something that the emptiness is not something that we are trying to recognize in the conceptual state. Rather, in order to develop the understanding, we have to go or we have to penetrate these concepts and have to recognize these more fundamental characteristics. And when we are further and further understanding or developing that understanding, so that understanding will take us to emptiness. So don't worry right now. So if you are practicing Anapanasati, so continue that. And if your breath fades off, probably you can see whether there are any sensations available, there are feelings available, there are any thoughts available. And you can recognize them as well. How they are evolving, how they are starting, how they are changing, how they are passing away. So that helps you to further understand the true nature of those phenomena.
Okay. Question number 3 of 5, general question. Dear Venerable Sir, when one becomes a stream winner, we have heard that 3 fetters are abandoned. We can understand the relinquishment of doubt or uncertainty, but awakeness and attachment to rites and rituals. However, there are a lot of ambiguities of abandoning beliefs in a self, sakkaditti. Appreciate if Venerable can explain if this is a true abandoning of the identity view or something less profound. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, sakkaya ditti is something that we refer to the 5 aggregates and considering 5 aggregates as a self. And self belongs to 5 aggregates, or self is within 5 aggregates, or 5 aggregates within the self. So likewise, per each aggregate, there are 4 different ways the Sakkaya Ditti is explained. I mean, we can call it and we can define it technically using these 20 kinds of sakkayaditti. But more than that, actually, what we need to understand is how this sakkayaditti manifests in our mind. You can read a book, you can read a sutta, and there you can recognize, okay, sakkayaditti is this, okay, with respect to body or with respect to form. You can have a kind of a view, thinking, or okay, this body is myself, this body is me, or this body belongs to me, or I am in this body, or otherwise, say, this body may be something which is within me. So I am something larger, and within that large me, large myself, there is a component called body. So likewise, different ways that we can call how the sakkayaditti is arisen with respect to the body. Now, similarly, it's the feelings. Now, assume that you have a headache. So there you are talking, okay, this is my headache. So I am suffering my headache. And you take it so personally. So I am suffering. I am having a bad headache. So if we are simply using it for mere communication, that's all right. But sometimes going beyond that, we are suffering by hating that headache and thinking, comparing ourselves with another person, again and again referring oneself as an individual, as a person, and again referring that headache as something belong to you. So likewise, all these reference can lead to wrong notions in one's mind. We need to practically understand how these, say, reference are making a self. Say you are having a degree. So how you are referring yourself with respect to a degree. I am a degree holder. So this is my degree. So my degree is better than your degree. So my degree is higher than your degree. So I need to obtain another degree. So likewise, you can refer even such kind of a state as yourself. So everywhere we can recognize or identify ourselves with another, that kind of an artificial state. It could be external or it could be internal. So it can be a form, it can be a feeling, it can be a perception, it can be a formation, or it can be a kind of a cognition happening when you are seeing of something. Okay, this is my house. This is my sight. So I am the one who saw it. I am the one first saw that picture. I am the one first listened to that song. I am the one singing that song. So likewise, we can refer to all these sense cognitions as a person, as myself. Now, all these things can refer as sakkayaditti. When you are referring that, again and again, we are born as a person. We are born as an individual. And say, as you continue as a person, then you are suffering. With the Dhamma, what happened is, so again and again, so we are trying to realize, so there is no person here, there is no being here, there is no individual here. So what we are experiencing is kind of a flux arising and passing away. So again and again, if we are enhancing that knowledge or we are strengthening that knowledge and abandoning that identification, there could be a possibility that mind become fairly free from such identification. One is not getting to a personality view. So in a way, we can call it as a kind of a gross identification, because even when one becomes a sotapanna, still some subtle sense of I could be available. So that is what available as the what we call as asmimana. So because we, even though we individually don't recognize each aggregate as a person, as an individual, as myself, but still we may have a self-notion. We can have a subtle sense of I. So that is explained in the Kemaka Sutta, where Venerable Kemaka explained using a very beautiful simile If you are referring a smell or a scent, a fragrance of a flower, you can't say the fragrance is coming from petals. Fragrance is coming from the leaves. What you can say is the fragrance is available or coming from the flower. So likewise, Venerable Khemaka explained, even though individually you are not recognizing form as myself, feelings as myself, or perceptions as myself, formations as myself, consciousness as myself, even after one becomes a sotapanna, there could be a subtle sense of I am. So therefore, these things are in a way very subtle points. Anyway, as we continue our practice, so more and more I-related thoughts, or what we can say as self-referential thoughts, if they are becoming less and less, so that indicates that fair amount of fading away of the Sakkaya Ditti, fading away of the Asvimana. So those things may happen gradually. And I hope this answer would be sufficient.
Question number 4 of 5. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, last time there was a Dhamma Sermon question about why we feel relaxed and happy when we hear some suttas like Ratana Sutta. As I understood, Bhante explained that this might not be the first time we hear Dhamma and it might be our samsaric inclination. Just want to clarify from Bhante that do we need to sort these areas to accept without any doubt, or just having a high level acceptance is enough without rejecting these phenomena? Much merits for your service and for answering all these questions, Bhante. With metta, let's get to the question.
I don't know. I mean, we can answer all the questions because sometimes, I mean, certain things we can try to answer, we can try to find a solution, but our capacities are very, very limited. Now, say, for example, if you have a certain inclination towards a Dhamma, so when that inclination has started, was it started in this life or is it coming from the past lives? And from which past life it has started? So we can't find a concrete answer to that because we can't see our past lives. And even if we can't see several past lives, how about the previous past lives? So therefore, these capacities are very limited. And therefore, finding all the solutions to all these different kinds of questions is something in a way time consuming. And on the other hand, these are certain questions coming because of our doubts, vichikicca, skeptical doubts. And if you refer Sabbasava Sutta, Buddha mentioned with respect to a person, with respect to a self, you can have various kinds of doubts. Whether I was available in the past, who am I in the past, who was I in the past, and where I was in the past, and from where I came to that past life, and from that past life, where did I arrive again? And with respect to the present life, am I available right now or am I not available right now? And from where I came to this present life, where from this present life I am going to go? And to the future, also very similar. And where I will be reborn in the future? And from where I'll be again going from that future life? From where I am going to come to that future life, how I will be in that future life. So likewise, so we are having that Sakkaya Ditti, a person, a personality view, a self view, and with respect to that self view, we can form or we can formulate many different ways of thinking patterns. And Buddha say it's an utter confusion. It leads to utter confusion. It leads to various wrong views. Ditti visukam, ditti kantaram. So likewise, Buddha says it's an utter desert of wrong views. Because the whole thinking pattern is centered on wrong notion. That is, there is a person here. There is a self here. There is a soul here. I am here. So rather than thinking like that and trying to find a solution, so Buddha's practice, the teaching, is very much like we are trying to recognize how these forms are arising and passing away, how these perceptions are arising and passing away, how these feelings are arising and passing away, how these formations, thoughts, intentions are arising and passing away. So likewise, so the solution happens in a different way. And you arrive at that solution. So Buddha mentioned, so all those previous doubts you had become less and less. And you may understand, okay, what was available is nothing but these five aggregates. What is available right now is nothing but five aggregates. And even if there are future lives, what is going to be available is nothing but five aggregates. So therefore, don't try to find out all the different solutions or say bright answers to the questions. Rather, give more prominence to your practice rather than intellectualizing the teaching, or rather intellectually trying to find a solution. So you better find out what is going on right now, how this form arising and passing away, how these feelings arise and pass away, how the perceptions arise and pass away, how various intentions, thoughts, perceptions arise and pass away, how different cognitions arise and pass away. And then you get a kind of a different solution which will eliminate all these doubts. And you may recognize no point of thinking about these various, unanswerable questions with respect to a person, with respect to an individual, and that is not necessary. Okay, we can move further.
Question number 5 of 5, this is the last question, and it's from the Dhamma Saman. Dear Bhante, while it is important to respect the Sangha, what should one do if we note that a member of the Sangha is not properly following the practice or doing wrongful things? Example, commenting that dana given is not tasty, despite putting a lot of effort, engaging in gossip or making harsh comments to the lay people or others. Is it okay in this situation to withdraw and stop supporting that monk? Will the lay person be punished with metta? That's the end of the question.
So there's no one to punish. But if you yourself is harboring a lot of, hateful thoughts about that particular monk, or you are regretting about what you have done, so all these things are again coming back to us. See, if you understood the particular monk is not suitable, or he is not appropriate to the order, and he is misbehaving, and you are sort of losing your faith, and you are not getting any encouragement towards the practice, and whatever the faith you had is now diminishing to the whole sangha, so better avoid, because whatever the available faith is, better you protect. Rather than associating a bad person, bad role model, you are harming your faith. Better protect yourself, protect your faith. And there may be other monks who are practicing, and other monks who are diligently trying to protect their sila. So likewise, so we are trying to refer the good side and trying to develop our faith. Actually, the Buddha sometimes mentioned, whoever is not properly, maintaining the restraint or maintaining the sila, is not properly coming under the Sangha. So there are various people who are simply putting a robe onto the body, but mere robe does not say that he is a person within the Sangha. So if we are referring the whole Sangha, that is the noble Sangha we are referring. And but on the other hand, we need to understand, so we can't become immediately perfect. And sometimes the way a particular monk behaving, even though he may be using harsh words, there are sometimes possibility there is no hate internally. And there are such situations happen even during the Buddha's time. Probably you might have heard about the Pilindivaccha Arahant, Pilindivaccha, where he is referring the others as the vassalas, as the outcast. And the other monks are now complaining to the Buddha. So this particular monk is referring us as the outcast. And then Buddha mentioned it is not out of hate that he is referring. Rather, he was born as a Brahmin for many, many lifetimes. So as a result of that, he used to call the others as an outcast. So therefore, these are very difficult to understand whether this particular monk, without any hate, without any greed, whether he is referring, asking something, or whether he is exactly out of hate, out of greed, he is asking or referring something. So rather than trying to find out all this, so we better protect our faith. And in a way, very difficult to give a yes or no answer, and better protect our sila, protect our samadhi, protect our, or develop our samadhi, develop our wisdom. And for that, actually, we need a fair amount of support coming from the Sangha, fair amount of example coming from the Sangha. And that is why Buddha is referring, and it is the supreme field of merit. And again, on the other hand, we need to understand that they also are human beings. Even though they are referring the order of Sangha, they also are human beings. And there may be certain situations that they can't control themselves. Certain defilements overwhelm them, overpower them. So they become helpless. And on such situation, if they understand that fault, offense, they may go to another member of Sangha and they may be confessing it and going through a probation, going through a kind of the proper corrective measures. So that is also established in the sasana, that is called the various Vinaya disciplines. So those are also available. Anyway, it is not, say, the business of the lay people to get into all these things. But as a layperson's point of view, so if we feel that because of the association of a particular monk, by referring to a particular monk, if my faith is deteriorating, better avoid that and maintain one's own faith.